Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 This morning we're going to read from Canto 3, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 31, and we're going to read text 12 and 13. The chapter title is The Movements of the Living Entities, which follows Chapter 30, which is Adverse Fruitive Activities. So this is a scary section, sobering section. The glories of devotional service are the previous two chapters, 28, 29. And then those that don't engage in devotional service engage in fruitive activities, and there's consequences. There's a life and the consequences of that life. That's the previous chapter. And hearing about the journey to Yamaraja's abode, that's scary. Coming before Yamaraj, the destination of the hellish planets, which then continues in Canto 5. No, it's not a pretty picture. And then after seeing the hellish planets and living some period of time in the hellish planet, living entities take birth. Again, in the earthly realm, depending on the species, so there's different types of birth. That's described at the beginning of this chapter. And a human birth, life within the womb, what that experience is like. Not going to read all that. We already read it. It's unpleasant. So now the verse that we're reading this morning, that's the context. This is the living entity who is in this very uncomfortable position, more than uncomfortable position, suffering position, wanting relief from their suffering. Sound familiar? So here's the prayer. The human soul says, I take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears in his various eternal forms and walks on the surface of the world. I take shelter of him only, because he can give me relief from all fear, and from him I have received this condition of life, which is just befitting my impious activities. Purport. Two paragraphs. The word chalach charanaravindam refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who actually walks or travels on the surface of the world. For example, Lord Ramachandra actually walked on the surface of the world, and Lord Krishna also walked, just like an ordinary man. The prayer is therefore offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who descends to the surface of this earth or any part of this universe for the protection of the pious and the destruction of the impious. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that when there is an increase of irreligion and discrepancies arise in the real religious activities, the Supreme Lord comes to protect the pious and to kill the impious. This verse indicates Lord Krishna. In the second paragraph, another significant point in this verse is that the Lord comes, Ichchaya, by his own will. As Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita, Sambhavam Yat Mamayaya, I appear at my will, by my internal potential power. He is not forced to come by the laws of material nature. It is stated here, Ichchaya, colon. He does not assume, in italics, any form, as the impersonalists think, because he comes at his own will. And the form in which he descends is his eternal form. As the Supreme Lord puts the living entity into the condition of horrible existence, he can also deliver him, and therefore one should seek shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna demands, quote, give up everything and surrender unto me. And it is also said in Bhagavad Gita that anyone who approaches him does not come back again to accept a form in material existence, but goes back to Godhead, back home, never to return. And text 13 makes reference to 12, so we'll discuss that or read it. Translation, I, the pure soul, appearing now bound by my activities, am lying in the womb of my mother by the arrangements of Maya. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him who is also here with me, but who is unaffected and changeless. He is unlimited, but he is perceived in the repentant heart. To him I offer my respectful obeisances. Again, two-paragraph purport. As stated in the previous verse, the jiva soul says, I take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, constitutionally, the jiva soul is the subordinate servitor of the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead. Both the Supreme Soul and the jiva are sitting in the same body. As confirmed in the Upanishads, they are sitting as friends, but one is suffering and the other is aloof from suffering. Paragraph. In this verse it is said, Vishuddham avikaram akandabodham. The Supersoul is always sitting apart from all contamination. The living entity is contaminated and suffering because he has a material body. But that does not mean that because the Lord is also with him, he is also has a material body. He is avikaram, changeless. He is always the same, supreme. But unfortunately, the Mayavadi philosophers, because of their impure hearts, cannot understand that the Supreme Soul, the Supersoul, is different from the individual soul. It is said here, Atapyamana Hridaye Visitam. He is in the heart of every living entity, but he can be realized only by a soul who is repentant. The individual soul becomes repentant that he forgot his constitutional position, wanted to become one with the Supreme Soul, and tried his best to lord it over material nature. He has been baffled, and therefore he is repentant. At that time, Supersoul, or the relationship between the Supersoul and the individual soul, is realized. As it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, after many, many births, the knowledge comes to the conditioned soul that Vasudeva is great. He, in italics, is master. And again, in italics, he is Lord. The individual soul is the servant. and therefore he surrenders unto him. That's capital him. At that time, he becomes a Mahatma, a great soul, therefore a fortunate living being who comes to this understanding, even within the womb of his mother, has his liberation assured. That's pretty nice, have your liberation assured. This section is referred to from time to time in Prabhupada's writings and his talks, where sometimes, not always, a living entity manifests the consciousness of surrender, because the previous couple of verses is describing at a certain stage of the living entity's presence within the womb of mother, external consciousness is manifest, which means the soul that's within the womb then realizes more acutely the suffering condition. There's something like, you know, if you're asleep and, I don't know, mosquitoes biting you or something is, if you were conscious, you would, if you were awake, you would notice it much more than if you're asleep. Maybe you wake up because it's something, but when the living entity at a certain stage becomes externally conscious, the prior verse is describing the extremely difficult, cramped up, penned in, etc., tender skin being burned with the, depending on what the mother's eating. So it, then he becomes conscious, not just asleep. Then, so some souls begin to pray in this way. Pray for liberation. Get me out of here. I'll do anything. Just get me out of here. And then, you know, coming up is after he comes out, he forgets. Like we also forget. Make some commitment to Krishna and the circumstance gets better and we forget Krishna. It happens. The intention of the soul is being described, and pretty articulate understanding of the Supreme Lord's position. The description of the process of surrender, because surrender was a topic from yesterday evening, requires, among other things, it requires an acknowledgement of the capacity of the person who is being approached to deliver. Ultimately, the deliverer is Krishna. Others may act as agents of Krishna, but ultimately the deliverer is Krishna. So within the prayer, both these 12 and 13, the qualification of the Supreme Lord is being identified. Starting with recognizing his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, that's, in one sense, it's quite simple, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's really easy to say it, and it's another thing to understand it with such depth that there just isn't any other position but taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. you know, say that same statement forwards and backwards a number of different ways. Say it negatively. If one doesn't have a clear understanding of Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the words, I take shelter of you, doesn't have the same meaning, doesn't have the same force, doesn't have the same submission, doesn't have the same shelter-taking spirit as one who does have that understanding, proper understanding. So it's important to understand Krishna's position, in other words. So that reference, the very first statement that's made, is embellished in a variety of ways. So one of those variety of ways is the statement that as I am in this circumstance, you are also. But there's a distinction between the living entity that's in this circumstance and the Supreme Lord that's in that circumstance. And the Supreme Lord that's in that circumstance is totally unaffected. And because of our tiny position and because of our misidentification with the covering, we're compromised. We're suffering. Actually, the living entity is not suffering. The suffering takes place within the mind, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. The living entity is transcendental. Through the agency of false ego, we identify with the circumstance and think that's me. The agency of false ego covering the living entity forces the living entity or induces the living entity to identify with Maya, with what the living entity is not. And then depending upon the circumstances, finding happiness and distress, or a combination and vacillating between the two. And even what is happiness is dependent upon the conception of life the living entity is carrying. It has nothing to do with the living entity. Besides, it's an interesting philosophical point. It's a very important point in practical terms. For the most part, our suffering is within the mind. There's the ultimate suffering is the sense of disconnection with the Supreme, but we don't identify with that as our suffering. We identify with the suffering, the circumstance. And then the happiness is the circumstance, and it's neither happiness nor distress, but it appears very distressful. That for the personality of Godhead, he's aloof from all that. Eternally. Aloof from all that. At the same time, he's aloof from all that. This, yet another glory of the personality of Godhead, mysterious glory, is like us, he walks here and there. But still he's still not affected. Let's say the same thing in a different way. The personality of Godhead creates, and then he enters into the creation. He performs pastimes and he withdraws from the creation. One of the examples in the Bhagavatam is like the spider, who from his own body he creates a web, then he goes and moves around the web, and then he withdraws from the web and may withdraw the web back within the body of the spider. Of course, Krishna is not a spider, but it's a metaphor to indicate that there's some similarity in this place that's created comes from its energetic source, and the energetic source may appear. So when he appears like one of us, especially the two references that are made are Ramchandra and Krishna, and particularly because their forms are human-like, there are others that are not human-like, but they're part of the glory, and that the charm of their pastimes is they appear human-like. They appear like one of us, not just a special upgraded version of one of us. That's the Mayavadi notion. You can become Krishna or be one with Krishna. And then the Sajjas, you can just imitate Krishna's pastimes. And so, not like that. Not like either of those, the Sahajiyas or the Mayavadis. But rather, the devotional picture the Bhagavatam is giving us is he moves about with amongst us, he appears to be like us, but we should know he's not like us. And one of the ways he's unaffected. For him, there's no sorrow. Or the specific Sanskrit term that's mentioned in the second paragraph is, by his own will he appears. Those that are familiar with hearing Prabhupada's lectures know that he would say this regularly. Like, living entity doesn't have a choice. By material nature's force, the living entity is forced to take birth. You don't choose what, you know, that you're going to take birth or not take birth, or who your parents are going to be, or where you're going to live, or what your social, economic, and educational status. You don't have a choice. You're forced by material nature. Krishna is not forced. If he comes, when he comes, it's by his own will. And everything happens by his will. Quite a difference. Recognizing that difference, one takes shelter of him. And then comes the next verse. That shelter of him indicates the position of liberation. It's already there. Why? Because he's already liberated. We're conditioned, and he's liberated. We take shelter of he who is liberated. We become liberated. I offer my respectful obeisance unto him who is also here with me, but who is unaffected and changeless. So that's an important Sanskrit term, vikaram. Little lesson from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verses 8 through 12. Those lists of things that are of the material nature, and then the realm of spirit is apart from that. Familiar with that little section? So it lists the 24 elements. You know, earlier in chapter 7 it lists 8. Now it expands to 24. It's just, you know, further delineation of the 8. It's just a different system or model. But it's the same description, just different model of the same description. And then there's happiness and distress and other things that indicates, you know, the interaction between the different elements. So what goes on in the mind, happiness and distress, it's just it's the material elements, one of which is the mind. And then the Sanskrit phrase is sa vikarangs, same phrase is used here. The transformations. This is a basic teaching of Vyasadeva that's distinct from impersonalism. The technical term is shakti parinama vada. Vada, the doctrine of the transformation of potencies. This is Vyasadeva's teaching. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching. That's what Bhagavad Gita is teaching. And that's what this verse is teaching. The material elements undergo transformation. And by transformation of states of matter, you get varieties of matter. Some look like this, some look like that, some come into being, some stay for some time, some go and take on different shapes and configurations. That's the material nature. Distinct in this other category, this is Sankhya, in the other category is that which doesn't undergo change. And the Supreme Lord doesn't undergo change. That's what's being said here. Unaffected and changeless. So he is the personality of Godhead. He doesn't become the personality of Godhead. So reference is made. Unfortunately, the Mayavadis don't understand this. They have a different idea. And there's different types of Mayavadis that have different types of ideas. But it's inconsistent with Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's important to say that because Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Vedas, and the Vedas are written by Vyasa, and Vyasa is the authority that the Mayavadis accept, at least the Shankara Mayavadis. They accept the authority of Vyas, and they say something other than Vyas. They just say it in a clever way, or as Jiva Goswami says, not just contradictory, but incomprehensible. The word jugglery. I was doing some study on this. There was one, but you know, historically there was somebody that said this, and then somebody that said that, and somebody that said this, and somebody that said that. Historically, there was this one Shankara follower who came after Sridhar Swami, the commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, and he is appreciated amongst Shankara followers as being, oh, so erudite, you can't understand what he's saying. And very, very complicated ways of twisting and turning to come out where the incomprehensible remains incomprehensible, but it seems that it's comprehensible. At least, you know, this fellow can understand it. Now they have schools to study his incomprehensible teachings. So it's, without going into it, it's not just complicated. It's just such a foolish notion, but I'm tempted to say it, but the Brahman, their idea of it's all one, somehow, you know, there's varieties of Mayavadis differ as to the how, but somehow the undivided Brahman becomes divided or reflected. And it becomes divided by upadis, or reflected by upadis, and their idea of Vishnu or Krishna is the undivided Brahman that becomes divided or covered by an upadi. And one of the upadis is called Ishvara. It's just an upadi. It doesn't really exist. It just doesn't exist. But somehow Brahman becomes covered by that which doesn't exist and becomes Vishnu. Ishvara. The Ishvara upadi. Not in the same way that, you know, we have upadis. It's the same term, but it's the application of the term is slightly different. Anyway, it's interesting philosophy, but the conclusion of it is, it's incomprehensible. It's unfortunate. I mean, it's driven by the idea of envy. I covet the position of being the Supreme. So if the Supreme is Brahman, then I'm Brahman, and I can worship Vishnu, become Brahman. But I'm already Brahman. I just have to realize my Brahmanness. So it's sad. But the Bhagavatam's message and Vyasadeva's realization upon which the Bhagavatam was composed, the basis of the whole composition, says there's this external energy. Yayasa mohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. of the living entity Paropi. Although the living entity is para, the living entity thinks otherwise. Trigunatmakam, made of the modes of nature. So then, Ishvara is also modes of nature, very rarefied, almost Brahman, but not quite. And then the purpose of Ishvara is to get you to the Brahman position. So that this distinction is eternal. That is, the living entities are tiny, particles of Brahman, or like the Supreme Brahman. And then the Supreme Brahman is infallible. He's Ajita. He never comes under the influence of that material energy that he moves within from time to time. And what does he do to, as described, to correct your religion and to give protection to those who are religious? Once this clear distinction is made between the living entity and the Supreme, the position of shelter taking becomes very natural, easy. The difficulty is we're prone to false ego, and false ego just blocks or obfuscates the reality, and so we move in this illusion place, trying to be nice people, but for sure trying to enjoy. Maybe sometimes not so nice, but trying to enjoy. Independent of the Supreme, so that desire, that's the, what brings us here, covered by false ego. So the living entity takes is in the womb, has yet to take his birth, but in the womb is suffering and becomes quite God-conscious, making this affirmation or commitment to take shelter. So Prabhupada ends the text. Therefore, fortunate living being who comes to this understanding, even within the womb of his mother, has liberation assured. So if you're not liberated, you didn't do this. But if you do this, your liberation is assured. And it's not just, you know, professing or saying, uttering once. The Supreme Lord doesn't forget that once uttering. But it's an ongoing process. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, just to end with this, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses this point, the proper understanding of I surrender unto you, which is what's being stated here. It's not a one-time event. It implies, it indicates an implied understanding of a continual process of surrender and submission. Because otherwise it's not surrender. It's entrepreneurial. But real surrender is ongoing. It's a condition of heart. A condition of disposition with regard to the place of shelter. A relationship like that. Okay, so any discussion? Yes?
Just one more question. Quoting NASA, Sri Ramana Swarup Prabhu told that the foundation of stupidity is path of pride.
The foundation of?
Stupidity.
Stupidity?
Yeah.
The foundation of stupidity is?
Path of pride.
Path? P-A-T-H.
Saying that, like, NASA, after Apollo mission, their slogan was, will you conquer the space? And Prabhupada was saying, like, really? You don't even know what is space. You don't even know your solar system. So I was thinking, like, this Mayavadi philosophy, like giving Krishna as a upadhi, and treating him as a upadhi, and is it also because of pride?
Of course. Well, anything to justify, I'm God. That's the objective. There's just different varieties of it. Living entity that's the materialist, that they just have a different variety of going about it, and my body similarly, aversion to the person who is actually the supreme. So it's stemming from that. I desire to be the supreme. I want to enjoy without restriction. I'm not answerable to anybody. So you can say it's pride, but it's, I want to enjoy independently.
Guru Maharaj, is this verse saying that the living entity surrenders to Krishna only when he undergoes the suffering, experiences suffering, and then that surrender is temporary unless and until living entity actually understands the supreme Lord, super soul, through hearing process, then only that surrender is real.
Well, there's two parts to your question. It's not that the premise, the first part, only when the living entity is suffering. Well, we're suffering. Whether we're recognizing that we're suffering or we're not, we may think the suffering is enjoyment. The person who is inebriated is thinking he's enjoying. And that a liberated soul understands it's a condition of suffering. And a person that's, on the other end of this, in the heavenly planetary system or whatever, they're suffering because the position of really real happiness is away from them. So we're all suffering. So not only when we're suffering, we're suffering. Some people that are on the top of the mountain of material prosperity, they also understand it's suffering. The happiness that they expected isn't there. And that's suffering. All the sacrifice I've made, etc., etc. The happiness I was hoping for isn't here. Naturally. But then the second part is on the basis of hearing. Well, the living entity, you can make an argument, the living entity that's in the womb praying like this, what hearing have they done? But you can say in their previous life they heard. Otherwise, how would they know anything? How would you know anything? We're in ignorance. How is the living entity in the womb having knowledge like this? So, in that sense, the answer to your question is yes. Somewhere, at some point, there was some hearing. And that carries forward, the impression at least carries forward, and one may access that impression, at least in this case. Not necessarily conventionally is that what happens, but it may happen. But just back to taking the two parts of your question and stepping back, now practically how does this apply to us? Not bring on the suffering because then I can surrender. We're suffering. Whether, you know, whatever the rise and the fall of the waves of the material energy are going, we're suffering because it's just not the right position for us. Awakening of bhakti begins when there's some preliminary desire and, by the mercy of Krishna, some association of persons that are carrying Krishna's message. Then our devotional service can awaken.
Yes.
And you say, hearing. So, yeah, hearing. I was thinking during the kirtan last night, a lot of, especially the second kirtan, and based upon the questions, a lot of new people. And new people that have some conception of spirituality, but not, you know, a descending knowledge kind of conception of spirituality. So now we're having kirtan. And how's kirtan acting? It's our core activity. And it's just, it's very wonderful. Besides, you know, people were moving rhythmically with, you know, the beat and the melody. It's acting on the heart. To help one become qualified to understand the transcendental message, the descending knowledge message. So they go perfectly together. And it's just, it acts, even, you know, if, whether it's the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam or it's the kirtan, it's acting. It puts the two things together. We're suffering. We don't like to suffer. We like happiness. We don't even really know what the standard of happiness is, but we like happiness. It's just the soul's natural position is to be in that position of happiness and the opportunity to hear different varieties of that. So as devotees, we should be very conscientious about our sound vibration, purposefully elevating of consciousness, even if we're addressing, you know, can you hand me the salt? Or whatever, you know, something seemingly quite ordinary. If the consciousness is to please Krishna, then even those worldly exchanges have some spiritual potency to them. So then we're in the position of being an instrument of Krishna to deliver Krishna. Anyway, just some appreciation of the sound vibration that comes from the heart of a devotee, even it may be worldly things, seemingly. There's some great spiritual benefit just being in the association of devotees. We should honor that. Even, you know, the devotee, including ourselves, may be less than perfect. We our appreciation of the importance of devotee association is the devotion that's carried within the heart and how we can benefit and others can benefit from that. Something else? Yes?
The Maharaj, the phrase that Krishna can be perceived in the repentant heart, I struggle a lot with feeling disconnected within the heart a lot of times, and the whole Krishna connection just seems like it just has gone very far. How can I, in those times, take some small steps to feel Krishna and His representative's presence in my life?
The starting entry point is the holy name. And the holy name, Abhinatvam Nama Namino. So yeah, I may not be feeling that, but if in a prayerful mood, accepting at least philosophically, the sound of Krishna's name and the person Krishna are the same. And just by meditating upon bringing the mind to that tattva, the truth, that the name of Krishna and Krishna are not different. The mind to want, you know, the disconnect is, it's our relationship with Krishna problem. But Krishna is kind anyways. He comes anyways. Even we got, you know, this thing going on in our heart about our attitude towards him. He comes anyways. Just by calling his name. So the struggle may go on, but you stay with the faithful calling of the holy name. And like, just like discussed, just the prior topic or question, we associate with those who are faithful, and that nourishes our sense of faith or sense of being connected through that, through the association of those who are faithful. Those are two primary: the quality, the purpose behind the activity of chanting. Why do we do this? The name of Krishna and Krishna are no different. We're associating with him. I'm feeling the sense of being disconnected. I want to feel connected. So Krishna knows. So we can carry forward. Keep close association with those that are faithful. Two best things. Yes?
In regards to the Mayavadi wanting to become Brahman, is it that, like, after enjoying material energy, since they have been unsuccessful, so my question is actually twofold. One is, what is the relationship between Brahman and the internal energy of Krishna? Are they the same?
And no.
No. Okay. So Mayavadis are trying to avoid the person, but they accept the energy, this spiritual.
No, you just said something that's not correct. They don't see energetic energy. Because that would mean two. There isn't energy. Brahman is neuter, emasculated.
So what is the relationship between the internal energy and the Brahman feature?
Well, the internal energy is connected to Bhagavan. And Brahman is an aspect of Bhagavan. Paramatma is an aspect of Bhagavan. And the internal potency is the potency of Bhagavan. Brahman isn't potency of Bhagavan. Brahman is an aspect of Bhagavan. One of three. It's a classic.
So, like, especially if there are a lot of problems at work, and if you provide a solution, the mind feels happy that, okay, I've been able to provide a solution, it becomes kind of like elevated. And then again, for it to come back down to its normal state and associate with Krishna and to get into the devotional state, it takes some time. So, So I'm thinking that even at work, when the mind gets agitated, it's also like gratifying the senses, like the mind.
When the mind gets, you speak really fast. When the mind gets agitated at work, then what? Let her speak.
The mind gets agitated at work, then there's a sense of accomplishment. Okay,
a sense of accomplishment? By the mind getting agitated?
Like in the sense it gets elevated, okay, that's a problem, we are being able to give a solution.
Elevated or agitated?
I don't know if you phrase it correctly, I think elevated is the right word.
Okay.
But after that it takes a while to calm down.
Was that elevated just like pride? Yay, I did it.
I wouldn't say pride, it gets very happy that, okay, there is a problem, I've been able to give a solution. It's kind of like feeling happy about, I would say it's also kind of like proprietorship.
Okay, so now, what's the explicit question you're asking? You're describing a scenario. What's the question?
The question is, how do I stay
Krishna conscious in the workplace?
Yes. Without getting carried away.
Chant good japa. That, you know, awaken the through chanting good japa. Preliminary is the sense of I am Krishna's servant. I want to be engaged in Krishna's service. The Maha Mantra is an appeal to be engaged in Krishna's service. So it's identifying you as the servant and the object of service, Krishna, and that relationship. And if you chant nicely and become stronger and stronger and stronger in that relationship of being in Krishna's service, when you go to the workplace, guess what? You're in the mood of, I'm in Krishna's service. So what happens commonly is we're not in the mood of Krishna's service, we're in the mood of doership. Here's the situation, it's a challenge, and, you know, but I'm good at addressing challenging situations, and I'm going to do it. Yay, I did it. It's false ego. Acting in, so what's the antidote to acting in false ego? Act in Krishna consciousness. How do I act in Krishna consciousness? Chant the holy name nicely. It awakens the proper mood of devotion to Krishna. And, you know, and associate with devotees and discuss devotional topics just like we're doing right now. So it's gradual because we're quite habituated to befriending false ego and acting through false ego. So it's not going to happen so quickly. But by cultivation of Krishna bhakti, then that's the solution to your, you know, to your question. And how do I develop that Krishna bhakti? By methods mentioned. And permit yourself some patience while you're cultivating Krishna bhakti, because it's not going to happen so quickly. We're stubborn. Really, it can happen immediately, but we're just very conditioned, habituated to our ways of acting through false ego. So it's going to take some time. But the power of bhakti is such, it can not only minimize the influence of false ego, it can dissolve false ego. That's not us. But we're, you know, once again, we're addicted. We're you know, like an addict. We're addicted to false ego. So we have to do it like a little detox program so we're not addicted to false ego. It takes a lot of effort. A lot of faith in Krishna. But it's possible. Otherwise, we kind of have to go through this, what you just described. There's the devotional part of my life, as I do every morning, and then I go to work, and then there's this schizophrenic other side of my life, and I just do this other thing. Then I have to do some detox when I come back at home. It takes a while, and I kind of get a little devotional again. So, it's the cultivation of bhakti. And we have our methods. Actually, bhakti is meant to be cultivated when you're at the workplace. And when doing so, it's as, according to Brahma Samhita, it's as liberating as the direct devotional activity. this is not just an antidote for that, that toxicity. It's also a means, depending upon our particular conditioning, it's a means for purification. That's what prescribed duties are done properly, a means for purification. Not just a means, you know, not a secular view that this is what I do for my worldly part of my life and this is what I do for the Krishna part of my life. It's part of my purification. If done properly, when done properly. Others? Okay. See the Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Mr. Prasad Maharaj. Jai.